Hello, everyone, and welcome back to A Basic Conversation. Today, Father Basic is going to provide some perspective on one of our icons, and that is Dr. Martin Luther King. I can use the term icon, can I?
I think so. He is represents that for many people. I notice a lot of times in the public sphere these days, people who are not too attuned to racial equality and so on will still raise him up and say, but King did this, or King was a person that we could listen to. You hear that in the right-wing media at times. So, yeah, I like it.
So his impact is significant in so many ways.
That's the thing. Let's go back. And he was the son of a minister, and the black church was extremely important to him. We should make sure we don't miss that point. He grew up in the black church, and all his language reflects what the hymns that the black church is saying and so on. Very important. And in many ways, the son of a pastor and living a middle-class life shielded him from the ordinary problems of living in the South. There was one incident. He was on a school event, if I remember correctly, and they were taking a bus. I think it might have been an hour and a half trip or so. And the bus driver demanded that he get up and stand for a white person.
He was on the debate team.
It
was a high school.
High school thing, yeah that's right. And so if he was standing all that time and simmering and angry, and it was one of his tastes of discrimination.
So he could relate firsthand when Rosa Parks experienced
it. Yeah, for sure, yeah. You're all over this chapter, Brad. I'm glad.
Well, Dr. King is Dr. King.
You're way ahead of me on this thing.
I'll slow down then. You go. What else from his background?
Well, he studied. He went to good schools, and eventually went to Boston University and studied theology. He wrote his dissertation on comparing the doctrine of God in Paul Tillich and a more evangelical type by the name of Wyman. And out of Tillich, we remember that Paul Tillich's idea of God was look deeper. So he talked about God as the ground of being. God was the source of being, and Tillich thought that we would find God by going more within, looking deeper into life and our experiences. God was the depth of all life. God was a matter of ultimate concern. And that was big on King. He made that part of his own outlook on God and the way we would find God. We'd find God in the struggle for social justice. Mm-hmm. You know, as part of all of that. And he was a first class. He could have been he was a first-class theologian. I shouldn't play that down. He was a good theologian, but he didn't pursue it as an academic career. It was a fateful decision when he got out to finish his doctorate at Boston University. I believe it was May of 1954. Some of these dates are a little vague in my mind, but May of 1954, he made the decision to go to Montgomery, Alabama, and become the pastor of the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. And
he decided to do that versus going to a university.
Yeah, to following a career as an academic.
He wanted to be pastoral. And
that was open to him. He could have become a theologian. He was a theologian, and I would say he was a public theologian. And he used his theological knowledge well, but he chose to be a pastor. And so what happens, he's in Montgomery, Alabama, is Rosa Parks is sitting in the bus, and the bus driver orders her to get up and let away, and she won't do it. And she's arrested and so on. And so Martin Luther King, now just, you know, a young pastor, somehow was vaulted into the leadership of the response to Rosa Parks' arrest and so on. And he was, with very little preparation, time to prepare, was thrust into the public to give a talk, to say, what is the ministerial association, black ministerial association, going to say in response? And he was suddenly the one picked to do it. And so he didn't have a lot of time, but he got up and he made the crucial move that influenced his whole life. That is, he brought together elements of the American dream that we generally accept, you know, and elements of the Christian tradition. And said, and then the statement that always comes back to me is that he said, if our cause is wrong, that is now desegregating the buses. That became the cause. So Rosa Parks led the way. We want to desegregate those buses and transportation. He used a lot of different. But he said, if that cause is wrong, then the Constitution is wrong. And Jesus is nothing but a utopian dreamer. So that's how he put together this idea, which he then used through his whole life. You know, he would find elements of the American dream that fit in with the Christian teaching, and he would always put them together. And that's why it became the power of his approach, so that people could recognize, well, some of the stuff he's saying, yeah, our American dream is for people to be free. We say that in our writings and our approaches and so on. And Jesus said we should be free. And therefore, that begins a powerful mix. So that whole thing, that was such a struggle. So what the black community decided to do was to boycott the buses and walk to work. And it was tough. I mean, it was just so difficult. And it took a long time. And there were dark moments for King when it appeared this strategy isn't working at all. But he maintained his conviction to nonviolence. As I might note that part in King's life, he once went to India and to learn about Gandhi and Gandhi's nonviolent approaches. And he learned a lot about fasting and marches and how you get things done. He's a great example of applying the Gandhi's nonviolence or satyagraha, truth force, of applying it to the American scene. And he was serious about that, you know. He was always, nonviolence was important. So they're boycotting the buses, and it's getting harder and harder on the black people in Montgomery, Alabama. And Rosa Parks is rising up as a heroine, a public figure that's known around the country. And when it's looking dark, and then finally, I think it's about a year into the movement, where the Supreme Court then ruled that segregating the buses was not right. You had to have non-segregated transportation. Major victory. And became the sort of the leitmotif, the general theme of his whole movement, to pick out a cause and then to highlight it through nonviolent means, get it into the public consciousness, and eventually trying to get the courts and the executive branch and the legislature to enshrine that, which in many cases he did. So Rosa Parks remains, there's a, I know in Detroit, there's a Rosa Parks Avenue or something. All, well, there's Rosa Parks things all over all the over, country.
Yes. So the other piece of, so that was a big part of the, not the, it was a turning point for the civil rights movement.
Yeah, I mean, that's, many people saw it. What it showed again is that it worked. The nonviolent approach worked. And it showed up the viciousness of the oppressor. A lot of the stuff he did was to contrast the, you know, he talked about his people being a visible sign, the black community in the United States being a sign of moral vigor, of being a catalyst for helping the whole country to see what freedom should be all about.
Yeah. There's also the incident in Birmingham.
Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah, where the church is bombed.
Yeah.
And then he's called upon to go and to make things right. Yeah. He ends up getting arrested.
Yeah. Goes to jail.
Goes to jail.
He has no books with him.
No books. And what does he do in jail?
He writes the letter from Birmingham jail. Yeah. A great piece of writing and amazing recall without any books of the great figures in U.S. history and writings of theologians and so on. And one of the things that I always remember about it was he was really addressing in many ways the white clergy. That was me addressing the white clergy who kept, his reading of it was, the white clergy kept saying, go slower. No, don't rush this thing. We can't, you know, we got to get ready for this and so on. And castigated the white clergy for that, for failing to pick up the cause, and we can't wait around. The cause is in front of us. Act now. And so all the way through his life, he was a catalyst to people like me, working in largely white churches and trying to figure out how we could be part of this civil social rights movement.
Was it one of the points of that lengthy letter that he wrote from the Birmingham jail to the clergy was, it's the people that don't take up the cause, that are quiet, that is really the problem.
Yes.
He said the people that are the haters, you can deal with them, but we need the people that are sitting on the sideline to say something and do something.
Well, you picked up the essential message. Yeah, I agree. That's a pointed criticism. We need you. I know some of my friends, when the Selma March went down to march with King, a lot of white pastors did join in the movement and were part of it. Some white pastors got more courage to preach about racial problems, to bring it up in their homilies, to show how our own Catholic tradition would buttress what King was doing. and that we have our own long tradition of loving our neighbor and of nonviolence. Jesus says to Peter, put away the sword. You take up the sword, you'll perish by the sword. So some white pastors became more open to preaching. And what a lot of us found out, if we did echo that in almost any way, it brought a lot of resistance. I often said that when I preached on a social justice matter, I was worn out. And I, you know, make of it what you will, but I felt the resistance in the community. Because it's a harsh message. I mean, it's like talking about white privilege. You know, it irks people, it makes them mad, and so on. And that's still true today. But I had friends who went down there and were part of the march, and it was scary. And this is the Selma March. I'm jumping ahead.
Yes.
Maybe keep me better on track
you're
here.
You're doing great. All these are significant moments.
Should we go to that?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they prayed in church beforehand. And I remember one of my priest friends being afraid. They were in pretty much in some of the front lines of the march. And they were going to face difficult times. As we know, there was terrible encounter. John Lewis became one of the heroes of that, became a representative in Congress. There were laws, the John Lewis laws. John Lewis had his head beat and was seriously injured as part of the march. My friends who told me about it were not personally injured, but they were afraid in many ways that that would happen. And so...
And King felt the weight of that responsibility when people were getting hurt and for the cause.
Exactly.
Were some that were pushing him to be more militant and drop the nonviolence, and he stuck to it.
Yeah. Because people in the black community became... critical of him, and that he was not strong enough, and so on.
Some gravitated to a Malcolm X or Farrakhan.
Malcolm X would be a perfect example of criticism of Martin Luther King for not being stronger. But as you suggest in your comment, he persevered in nonviolence.
Yeah, there's a strength that
no matter
supersedes,
what. Yeah. I think part of that was his own prayer life. Oh, there's that wonderful experience, Brad, when Martin Luther King was in his kitchen and his house had been firebombed. And he said, part of his response was, no one will pull me down to that level of being violent. That kind of statement, you know, we could all use that.
Yes.
You know, there might be all kind of pressure on me to cave in, but I shouldn't let my critics pull me down. And he's a great example of that. I will not let them pull me down to the level of violence. And then there was he was in his kitchen and near despair, and of course he was always worried about threats against Coretta, his wonderful wife, great marriage and so on, and his children, which hurt him and disturbed him deeply, as you could well imagine. And Jesus appears to him, and those deep religious experiences, people always have struggled to figure out how to say what happened. The people I've dealt with who have had those experiences, when they tell me about them, sometimes they use different language and they change their words and so on. I've seen that over the years. But so the experience is ineffable, as we say, ineffable, unspeakable. Can't say them. But what he said, Jesus said to him, Martin Luther King, stand up for truth. Hmm. Martin, I might not get all the words perfect, but Martin Luther King, stand up for righteousness. Martin Luther King, stand up for justice. And lo, I will be with you all the days of your life. And that experience, he carried with him. It was the feeling that Jesus will not abandon me. That's back to that thing about the church. I always find black funerals to be impressive to me. They talk about death as a homegoing. And they sing their gospel songs that are filled with hope. We're oppressed, we got troubles, but somehow God will not abandon us. God is in charge of the world. And then the hymns are often so powerful, and he will pick up phrases from the hymns that he carries with him. And it's just part of him. It comes out of him. Freedom, theme of freedom. For him, the theme of the Exodus was so important. In the Exodus, what did God do? God gave political and social and economic freedom to a group of people. Exodus experience, so important in the black churches, because here's God intervenes. God comes and frees the people. And what does he do? He gives them their own land flowing with milk and honey, and that they are now free. So he just was part of his soul, that experience.
Should we highlight the impact of the I Have a Dream?
Yeah. Yeah. I seem I want to stay a little longer on Selma.
Okay.
What was the cause at Selma? Selma, the march, this was had to do with voting. Right, voting rights, overcoming. So what happened after the Civil War, the white community, the white Southerners, found ways to keep the blacks from voting. They would say, well, you have to recite certain parts of the Constitution. Or they would tell them the wrong place to go vote. I always think of that one story a woman tells about her grandfather. When they got the right to vote, he put on his best clothes, walked 10 miles to where he was supposed to vote. He got there. They told him, you can't vote here. You got to go someplace else. This happened twice. When he finally got to the place where he could vote, they had closed. A granddaughter tells the story about her grandfather. Somehow that always sticks in my mind. Here, this guy's first chance. So the point is that the segregationists found ways to keep blacks from voting. It was a tiny percentage of blacks that voted in the South. And so the Selma March, I hope I'm getting this right, was all about overcoming that. And what we eventually see, again, the success. So then they had turned back after the Bloody Sunday, right? And then they reconstituted and fasted and prayed. And then they go on again. And this time they succeed in completing the march despite the problems. And the happy outcome is eventually we got the civil rights actions which helped with voting. Sort of a sad note that some of those rights, the Supreme Court said that, well, it gets too complicated, but it's not as clear cut as it once was. So for a while, the southern states could not make laws that would anyway restrict voting. And then the Supreme Court, in our own time, said, well, the South is okay now, and they don't have to go through the federal courts to make restrictive laws. And that has happened again in many southern states. Where are we at in this?
I have a dream.
Yeah.
Let's go there.
Yeah.
The impact of that event. And
yeah. I've listened to a talk he gave to the Detroit Economic Club before that. And many of those themes came up in that talk. I was amazed. So it had become familiar territory to him. And it was very part of his being. But I think there was like at the Lincoln Memorial with 250,000 people, the great moments in our history. You know, people studied the talk, and you had the same thing. The American dream and the Christian message were woven together in the talk. All the wonderful phrases. Let freedom ring. Out of one of the things, let freedom ring. So on Martin Luther King Day, I often play that speech to recall it. And the whole meaning of the everyone singing "We Shall Overcome," it's still moving. I mean, people are sort of singing it's passé and so on, but I'd love to hear it again. Right. We shall overcome. We shall overcome segregation. We'll overcome restricting our voting rights. We'll find our place in the country.
I think the moving part of that I have a dream, but one of the speeches that I found that I listened to was the one he gave right the night before he died.
Oh, yeah.
I believe he was in a church and he was talking. Yeah. And you could see the weight of the world on him, but yep. It was very, he was at peace and he talked about the promised land and that he probably won't be with you. I won't be with you in the promised land, but I just thought that speech is incredibly powerful.
Oh, that's wonderful, Brad. I'm so glad you brought that up. So he had gone to Memphis, right?
Yep.
And to help the sanitation workers. He wanted to improve their economic and their situation. He was on their side. Typical of him. And gives this speech, I might not get there with you.
Yes.
But I've been to the mountain, I've seen it. It was like almost foretelling of his death,
yes.
Huh? I feel like, I don't know how much time we got left, but I felt like we got to this point too soon somehow.
There's a lot to cover in Dr. King's life, meaningful things.
Yeah, right. How much time do we have yet?
We have a couple more minutes.
A couple more minutes.
Yes.
Well, maybe you brought it to the right place and the conclusion. I did want to say that he tried to go north. Let's not miss that part. He went to Chicago and tried to work on overcoming segregation in the north, which was often much more subtle and harder to deal with. And he had a harder time with that. The cause often wasn't, at least as I remember it, was not as clear as it was in the segregation in the South, where you couldn't eat at lunch counters or ride buses. But it was all kind of redlining about hard for blacks to buy houses and so on, and how economic problems. So he wanted to have a march for economic rights as well as civil rights. So we should get that part. And then he got a lot of criticism there, probably in part, I think, because it wasn't as successful as he was other places. And Malcolm X and other people, you know, said we have to be stronger and fight harder and maybe put aside this violence, nonviolence thing. But, okay, I wanted to get that in, and now I'm with you down. Your recall of that speech is one. But, you know, we're both typical of, we still are inspired by that language. know, you started out by saying, can we call King an icon? And for me, he is.
For sure.
He yes. is for you, too.
Yes.
And that speech, yeah, he was there to assist them, to be with them. And
there's a whole piece on King just on leadership.
Yeah.
Right? There's a whole piece of that. And then that speech the night before he died, the weight of leadership and the weight of trying to bring good to the world and overturn injustice and evil. He could see it in that speech. But the weight of that and the tiredness of it, but then the hope.
Well put. Incidentally, I know you have your own podcast in the arena, and you talk to people about leadership.
Yes.
In fact, you interviewed me once on your podcast.
A couple of years ago, yes. It was a wonderful conversation.
You know, that was the first time I realized the power of podcasts, because after I did that, I think we did an hour and 20-minute podcast in your program in the arena. I heard from people all over the country who I hadn't talked to for years, seminarians I had taught and so on. That's the first time I realized, let's do more podcasting.
That's why we had to find Chris at WGTE and the good people at WGTE to create your own podcast.
For sure. Martin Luther King still speaks to us and inspires us, and we got a long ways to go yet. We've had a black president and made a lot of progress, but there are a lot of forces still we need to deal with.
Yes. So let's take up the challenge of Dr. King's life, that we make things better.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks, Father Basic.